Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Robert, I would say two of the biggest things on this show were a little more predictable than I would have liked. I'm curious if you've thought the same thing. I thought they did a good straight-faced job of building up the Cody U.S. title challenge against Theory. And then we had the very short amount of time, a very little amount of time left at the end of the show for the Bianca Belair-Oscar match with Becky at ringside. And you know one of them isn't going to score a win within 5 minutes. So you know Becky, who's at ringside, is going to interfere. So we got in two of the bigger matches on Raw, what I would call for a lot of fans, a lot of viewers, I don't know what percent, a predictable premature end and unsatisfying finish to the matches. And I think that put a bit of a damper on the show. And that's kind of my main, or at least top talking point coming out of the show. How about you?
Yeah, I felt fairly similar, whereas I think they're in isolation, it wasn't a bad decision to go the way they went in either case, specifically with the Cody Seth angle. But as you said, you could see that coming from a mile away. And as often as they do these finishes, you knew it was coming. And that is the problem with doing these finishes so often, is that they're anticipated and they lose all their shock value. Overall, though, I think what went off the air, as you said, was the timing. That last hour was weird. They threw a million things at you that last hour. After the first hour, where you basically had two elongated segments, and then, a fairly well-paced second hour, that last hour, they were throwing everything at you. And when a match starts with about 3 minutes until the top of the hour, you know that that the shenanigans aplenty are going to be afoot, so you don't really invest much in what you're watching.
Yeah, that second hour, or that last hour, I should say, was kind of weird. Did they explicitly say that Asuka was facing Bianca later? I saw the Asuka promo, and I'm wondering if I just missed if they said explicitly what her opportunity later was, or did they leave that vague and sort of a mystery?
I was a little lost about that as well. I was lost kind of trying to figure out what the main event was. Like, I was wondering if there was a promo segment coming up or something, because it really wasn't one of the things that they do, that they will do occasionally, where they run a lot of the video packages and maybe promote a main event. I mean, there was a moment where I thought the Ali Ciampa match was the main event, just because the way the pacing was just so odd.
Yeah, it had a weird vibe to it at the end of the show. And yeah, with Lashley pacing backstage, and we'll have a big announcement and a big challenge next. And I was like, are they implying that Lashley's going to have a match? Are they going to do Lashley against like MVP and Cedric, or just against Cedric and Omos? Or like, I just was kind of lost. I felt like, well, maybe I just, in watching the show, missed it. But they don't seem to be really hammering home the main events, the final match on the show. It seems to be a pattern where they're almost leaving it a bit of a mystery for viewers. Maybe they think leaving it to people's imagination is better than the match. But to me, Asuka against Belair, if that's happening, that deserves a really, like, that should be framed as a big deal. I think it defines down the return of Asuka and the star power of Belair to just throw it out there, setting aside how few minutes they had left. Just in general, to me, you lead the show and you go, fans, we have a very exciting announcement for you. Bianca Belair, one of the fastest rising top stars in all of WWE, is going to wrestle Asuka later. And it's Asuka's big return to the ring, one of the most successful wrestlers in the women's division in many years. She's been gone for a while. We're very excited to bring this match. I mean, now, they probably didn't want to do that if they weren't going to actually deliver more than 4 minutes of a match before a lame finish. And I get that. But the price that they pay is making it seem like they're trying to hide it from you, that this was a match that they were going to feature. And I think you got to own what you do and live with the consequences of people being let down by how short the match is and what the finish is. I'll take that over making it seem, it's sort of implied WWE doesn't feel this is a match that's worth making a big deal out of. You'd never see Roman Reigns wrestle on SmackDown and have it not be talked about incessantly for the whole 2 hours leading up to it.
Well, on this show alone, though, they did a fairly good job of hyping up the Theory Cody match, down to the point where they told you when it was going to be. So they can flag something for sort of appointment viewing. And this was, as you said, something they were almost ashamed to do because it wasn't a match. It was simply a plot device. But when you, as going back to our earlier topic, when you telegraph endings, that alone, you know, takes you out because you know you're not actually watching an Oscar versus Bianca match. You know you're watching chicanery. And that when that's already established from the beginning, there's not much you can do after that.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then we'll get to phone calls and emails and more conversation about a lot that happened on this post-Backlash episode of WWE Monday Night Raw. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 9th, 2022. And I am Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. I'll be here not only tonight after Raw, but also this Wednesday after Dynamite and this Friday after SmackDown doing live streaming shows, which you can find the live stream for at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can also find a direct link to the actual stream on our Twitter account near the end of each of the shows at PW Torch. Just check our Twitter feed and click the link, and you can stream our live feed if you want. And you can also find a link in my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown this week at PWTorch.com. I also host the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our non-post-show format, more generalized podcast covering a wide array of topics in a pre-recorded format. And we drop new flagships every week along with some best of shows and other features. And I also host a variety of VIP exclusive shows that are, and we're very appreciative of them, our VIP supporters, our VIP members get to hear on our VIP podcast feed, which is compatible with Apple Podcasts and just about every podcast app out there. Including the Wade Keller Hotlines, the post-pay-per-view roundtables, which I hosted with Todd Martin and Rich Van last night after Backlash, and our and then two other signature flagship shows, The Fix with Todd Martin and Everything with Rich Van. So if you're not a VIP member, we encourage you to go VIP and get a lot in return for your support and subscription money each month. Go to pwtorch.com/goVIP for information on how you can get our VIP exclusive content unlocked. It is compatible, like we said, with Apple Podcasts and other podcast apps. And also get all our free shows in a VIP format with ads and plugs edited out. So a real nice streamlined listening experience. If you enjoy these free shows, you can get them ad-free and have the plugs edited out too with your membership along with so much more. Again, full details at pwtorch.com/goVIP. And you can sign up at Patreon. You can pay through Patreon. You can pay with your Apple account on your iPhone and also with PayPal, debit, and credit card to sign up. And we hope you'll give us a try. The other voice you hear so far on today's show is Robert Vijhos. He is the host of the PW Torch Daily Cast's MMA-themed show that drops on Monday nights, MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans. Robert, great to have you back in the co-host chair tonight.
Great to be back on. I was hoping the call was coming soon, and it did, and it's going to be a fun episode of Raw to break down.
Yeah, the day after a pay-per-view, generally more newsworthy than most, and I think we got quite a bit of news, including a cage match between Bobby Lashley and Omos next week. We'll talk about the angle to set that up and what we think they'll do with that, but I want to give out the phone numbers and get to our callers who are already on hold first. If you want to join the program and participate, one of the great things about a live stream is your voice can be heard. Call 347-215-8558 and push 1 on your keypad. That number should also be on your screen if you're streaming this show. 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. That flags you on our switchboard so we know that you want to be brought onto the show. And you can also email the show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to calls. We have first up an 818 area code. 818, if this is you, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Rick. I'm from California, and I'm here for emotional support for Robert and his big return on the Wade Keller Post Show. I'm his trusty co-host on the MMA show that you just mentioned. Nice to hear and talk to you, Wade Keller. Enjoy being part of the contributing family.
I never heard of you, Rick. I'm not quite sure what's your title. Robert, can you fill me in here? What's going on here?
I have no idea who this man is. I'm calling security right away.
Don't worry, Rick, about welcome. Wade. Thank you. I'm here to boost both of your egos for a second. I just would like to say anticipation for calling in the show. I did do a little research. With Robert would be proud of me. It is very hard for me to keep track of Raw on a weekly basis. And Wade, I wanted to know what you think, because I told Robert this day in and day out. I'm one of the Raw viewers who only watches through YouTube clips now. And do you think that there is a growing number of us, or do you think it's up, down? Because I was telling Robert that watching Raws, or especially even watching pay-per-views, it's hard for me as a fan who watched wrestling all my life, but now exclusively essentially watch TV shows on the YouTube clips because it's all highlighted, to actually sit through a full pay-per-view or show because my attention span has been muted as a 37-year-old man.
Well, some people would say the attention span issue is with younger people, and the older people are the ones settling in for 3-hour baseball games and watching things like Raw in real time. Demographic speaking, that actually is more true. But yeah, I remember probably 5+ years ago on a WWE investors conference call, somebody asked about monetizing YouTube. And if they felt that all the content they were putting up on WWE.com and on YouTube was cannibalizing their, main revenue source, which is the rights fees for their major TV shows, Raw and SmackDown. And I mean, the executive at the time, I'm not sure who it was, if it was maybe Michelle Barrios. I don't know if it was Michelle Wilson or George Barrios, but one of them just said, we're not sure, but we have to be in that realm. Like, you could tell the way, they're trying to give an answer that didn't sound like they were doubting themselves, because I don't think they were doubting themselves, but they couldn't make the case that by featuring so much content through other means other than commercial cable, or now, it was before they were on SmackDown, or before SmackDown was on Fox on broadcast, but nevertheless, ad-based shows, you could tell they were kind of like, yeah, we don't know if it's going to be hard in the short run, but we have to be there. We can't not be on YouTube, in part because other people would bootleg, there'd be a bootleg versions of it, but you're going to reach people that you wouldn't reach otherwise, and it's just everybody, was going there with their clips, and it just is the reality of the entertainment landscape. And Raw is one of those shows where you can, live off clips. I mean, every once in a while, if I miss, a local sports game, there's, like an NHL game, NHL offers, a tidy, 12-minute highlight package that just catches you up on all the big plays, all the goals, all the big saves, big fights. And, there is a way for you to follow different entertainment and sports entities without sitting through things in real time. Some people prefer to kick back and just settle in, and they're big enough fans, and it's a way to pass time, and maybe they have a phone in their hand, or they're, have it on in the background, or they're playing a video game. I mean, different people have different ways of consuming it. But yeah, Rick, you are part of a big part of the WWE audience, and it's one of the reasons that I talked on Twitter last night, at The Wade Keller on Twitter, by the way, at The Wade Keller. I was talking about how, it's divisive, but these long video packages that they air during their premium live events, formerly called pay-per-views, back when you had to pay to view them individually, they run these long video packages that catch you up on the backstory of the match you're about to watch. And people who follow WWE closely just are like, why are you doing this? We already know this. Who's going to watch a pay-per-view if they aren't watching the TV show? But I think there is a growing number of people, and I bet they have some internal data to back this up, that there are some people whose WWE viewing is watching the big matches about once a month on Peacock, because that's where the best wrestling matches take place, uninterrupted by commercials. But they do want to be caught up, so they want to feel like they won't be lost, or not fully aware of what the backstory is, and those video packages get them emotionally invested. So WWE is, by the way, when people were paying $50, $60 for the pay-per-view, the video packages were kind of silly, because who's going to pay money for something that they don't understand the backstory of and aren't watching? But now that it just comes with Peacock, and it's so cheap, there are people, I think, who are doing that. So that's kind of my take. You're not alone, Rick. It is a changing landscape. People are consuming their entertainment in many different ways. WWE is making more money than ever off of cable, because cable's desperate for eyeballs, and so they're willing to pay a premium for live 52 weeks a year content that they can count on. But that said, you know, viewership is a lot lower through the traditional means, but a lot of people are following WWE the way that you are. Robert, your thoughts on what Rick had to say there?
No, and I think it's a big tension, and we talk about this a lot because, as you're saying, when you're watching the shows, for what you're saying about just the video packages, that does wear me out. And then I'm kind of more on the Todd Martin side of the argument when you reference like AEW with it, where they do almost none of that. There probably is a medium, and I think you can follow Raw in that way. I have tried it several times, but then I usually get an email from you a couple of days later saying, hey, can you come on the show on this evening? So I do feel it is more productive to watch the show in full. Because you don't get the full scope of things. I think you have to have like a completely other alternative media diet to really get everything. You have to watch the YouTube clips, listen to shows like this, listen to other podcasts, and then you get the full picture. So I look at it as more of a convenience, but then I know there are people like Rick, and to go back to the other conversation about it cannibalizing your cable audience, I think there's people like Rick who, if the YouTube clips didn't exist, they just would not be connected to the product whatsoever. So I kind of think it's a necessary evil, although, you know, anyone who's in the content game knows you're not going to get the money from, you know, YouTube monetization that you ever would from a TV rights deal.
Yeah. Rick, any follow-up on that? And if you watch Raw tonight, anything specifically about Raw too?
Well, yeah, I watched on YouTube. I watched at least RKO versus the Street Profits, the highlights they gave. And like you were saying, Robert, AEW shows you very little of what happens. So if you want to know, you got to watch. But WWE does pretty comprehensive sort of videos. So I essentially saw all the highlights of the match. And I've been unplugged and plugged in once in a while, like you said. I actually listen to more PW Torch breakdown of pay-per-views than your weekly and daily shows about what's happening on the shows and everything. So that's how I keep in the loop. So it's fun. Flash. Review to find out if I should actually watch Backlash. That's usually what my system is mm-hmm. like, what did Wade, what did Todd, I talked to Robert, what did they think about it? Should I watch it? And then I kind of backtrack. So anyways, the one thing I did want to say about watching Raw, and then I'll let you guys go. It's amazing for just a normal Raw. I was watching the tag match and it seemed very somewhat formulaic, but it still was entertaining. How packed that arena was. They did certain shots when they're doing the 10 count turnbuckle thing with Randy Orton up there. And just for a Raw, I really get detached from wrestling sometimes and I forget these arenas. It looked like there's nobody not in a seat in there. And it's just astounding that they can still do that. And I don't know if that's repurposing people hard side or anything, but it looked impressive from what I saw at least.
Yeah, they chose some good camera angles. I noticed pretty early on that the upward angle showed the upper deck opposite the hard camera had fans all the way to the last row.
Yeah.
I didn't pay close attention after that to if they were being real particular about wide shots or ring entrances and really hiding certain parts of the arena. Nevertheless, I mean, they make it look good, and they obviously still have a lot of cities where they go where there's, you know, 5, 10, and occasionally 12 or 13,000 people who want that WWE in-person experience. And I get it. Robert, anything you want to add?
Yeah, and I think in general this was a good crowd, though. Like, I don't know how much of it was sweetened, but the crowd was receptive to what they were doing on this night. So I don't know. I can't really speak to how full it was, but it definitely seemed like an engaged crowd for at least about the first hour and a half of the show.
Yeah. Cool. Rick, anything else you want to add?
Well, it's just good to confer with the Wade Keller and Robert. Stay safe, my friend. And, have a good show, guys.
Thanks, Rick. Good to talk to you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, you too, bud.
Discussion, yeah. Yeah, thanks, Rick. Robert, we'll talk about the show that you do with Rick in a segment or two here from now. But I want to keep rolling through calls and get to a little bit more specific Raw discussion. And again, everybody listening is welcome to call us, 347-215-8558. Always good to hear from our longtime listeners. We'd love to hear from some first-time callers. Love to hear from our, you know, Ashley and Lindsay and some of our female listeners. So a call to action to give us a call and tell us your thoughts on the show. Up next, we'll go to Justin in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then William in San Diego's on deck. Justin, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
I want to touch with you guys talking about earlier in the show about them not announcing the main event, things like that, not really advertising it. I kind of thought differently than you guys. I think it's them knowing they're going to go up against the NBA playoffs and just figuring, you know, at some point, if not the viewership already being hurt by the playoffs, nobody's going to be around by the main event, so why put all the energy to promote a main event that they probably think people are going to tune out of because of the playoffs, especially going against the West Coast game with the Golden State Warriors, which ratings have been pretty high for these playoffs. So that's kind of what I thought. What do you guys think about that? What do you think about the playoffs maybe interfering with the – they really didn't promote the main event that well last week either.
I know. I mean, do you wave the white flag or do you fight hard and put a stronger main event out there to try to hold the audience at a time when it's, you know, if you're USA Network, you don't want to hear about how this weekly series that you paid top dollar for is waving the white flag and conceding viewers to TBS and TNT and ESPN when it comes to NBA and NHL playoffs. You want WWE to fight hard. And I think there's a chance the perception, if it's a savvy network executive who isn't just looking at, oh, they put Bianca Belair in the main event, and Becky was at ringside, and they featured Lashley, and, oh, they gave away U.S. title. Like, if you actually watch the show in real time and see what they did, it does feel a little bit like they're just conceding the last hour to not putting up a fight and to the idea that they're going to lose other viewers. And the fact is every year they've had to compete with NBA and NHL. And during the football season, they're competing with the NFL. And there's baseball playoff games that go head-to-head with them. It's always been a thing that they've dealt with. So, Robert, your take on that.
Yeah, and specifically during their times of the year where they're really chugging is also when mainstream sports is chugging. Like, their not tri period is always in late July anyway, whenever mainstream American sports really aren't going either. So I don't know that they should factor that in all the time. I mean, maybe you put on a less heralded main event, but I still don't think that's an excuse not to at least promote what you have. Because whenever you're doing that, it's almost like you are ashamed of what it is that you have. Like, I think that might be a good spot. You know, put some younger people or some people you're kind of trying out in that position. Maybe you don't want to put one of your big matches because, you know, the viewers might be on the basketball games. I think that might be some sound logic, but I still think at the core of it, you can promote what you're doing to just create that more immersive experience.
Yeah. All right, Justin, back to you.
Yeah, maybe you guys are right about it. I just look at the way the ratings has been since the playoffs have really heated up, and it just seems like, you know, they're kind of just throwing the women in the main event. Say they're giving them the main event spot, but it doesn't really feel whole, real focused. Another thing I want to touch on is this whole Judgment Day group. I'm just really – they put a lot of effort into this, but I'm just really wondering, does the fans really care that much for the amount of time that they're putting in? I'm still willing to give it time. They just added a new member last night on the pay-per-view. But, you know, other than booing Edge for getting cheap heat against the crowd, I don't get the sense that the crowd really cares that much about what's supposed to be this big heel group. What do you guys think about that?
I liked this week's version of the Judgment Day with the additional member, and Edge is sort of, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm breaking down and buying that this is the Edge character, but I think it's a little more fleshed out when he's recruiting members and telling their story, because I guess I believe a little bit more Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest story than I do Edge's. And so the more the focus moves off of me trying to forget all the things that I learned about Edge and Beth Phoenix and the feud with Miz and the feud with Orton. And the more we move on to him saying, hey, there's these other people who are being held back and they were being soft and all that, I guess that's better. I mean, I don't just like hate this angle by any means, but I think Edge, it was such a likable legacy star babyface. I think they could have done a lot more with him and had someone else be the, you know, diabolical spokesperson for a new faction. But this can still work. I mean, it's sort of like my argument for Becky Lynch. You know, I get the argument, you know, that she was a very popular babyface. Why not embrace that in an era when it's so hard to get somebody who just people love and cheer? But at the same time, I'm enjoying her heel run, and I appreciate the effort she's putting in, and I think she's entertaining and as effective as is possible for somebody in this era who is as popular as she is. So I like Ripley in the group. I like the follow-up this week. And yeah, I mean, you ask, do people care? And I just don't know yet. You know, how people care or how much people care about the group. But if you're going to do it, I think you've got to seem like you're as all in as they seem on this. Robert, what do you think of the group and the addition of Ripley and what they did last night and in particular tonight?
Well, I think Ripley was the logical choice if you were going to add a member to the group. So that was, I think that was pretty telegraphed ahead of time. The thing I'll say about it is it's she's a difficult character, and I think this is going to make it difficult because like last night with the big reveal, there's not this like, you know, why Rhea, why thing whenever she did it. It's like, oh, she's got to do her hair's dyed and she looks cool in the way she's coming across. And I think that's going to be very difficult with her going forward if the full goal is for her to just be a heel in this role. With that said, we've been talking about it for almost 2 years on this show and other shows that she needs to gain a measure of focus. And it would seem like this would put her in a place of being focused on where she's not just solely caught up in some of the nonsense they do on the Raw brand from the women's side. Overall, though, I'm still very negative on this faction. And it's because of the Edge promos. Because they've been what they've been, and they really haven't served anything. And I think Priest has just gone like a little too over the top, and where his character was before he joined this group. So I don't see him necessarily a better place. I see Edge in a much worse place, but I do see this as something that could benefit Bianca. And sometimes that's what factions do. They end up just showcasing one of the members, and that ends up serving their purpose. If I had to do it over again, I wouldn't probably have any of this. This week, though, again, because it was less of the cheap heat and the sports teams and all that, the whole thing does ring hollow, though, because I don't necessarily look at Edge and, to a lesser degree, Rhea as these failed baby faces, as what these characters are, especially Edge, because that just was not happening. It was like, oh, we have this kind of part-timer old guy that people actually don't boo, that wrestles places other than Saudi Arabia. So there was some goodwill built in there. And I think Rhea, I don't think the fans ever turned on her as a babyface. It was just her booking was so herky-jerky that there was a little bit of apathy. Now, Priest, I think there's a little bit more legitimacy to that. So I think it's that old Mick Foley thing that there has to be some truth in what the heel is doing, and there's just so little of it in this that's a bigger part of why it's ringing hollow.
I was going to say something, and the point just floated away. It was about Edge and Becky. Oh, maybe it'll come back to me. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'll throw it back to Justin instead. Justin, any follow-up on that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to give it time. It's still new, but it just, you know, without the cheap heat, I just wonder how much the fans would really engage into these segments. And, you know, let's say they just beat Finn Balor and AJ Styles and, like, the Judgment Day group wins the feud that they're in. I mean, is Edge going to go after Roman's title? I mean, is it going to be heel versus, like, what is the culmination at program once they move on? You know, it's not like there's a bunch of strong babyface teams for them to really go up against. So it's like when you got a heel, when you got so many heel champions, it's like, what's next? So I just question that. That's why I don't really see the point. I think they took a really overbaby face. And go ahead.
I was just gonna say, all they need are probably two good opponents for Edge before the draft or superstar shakeup. You know, in October, November, whenever they do it, just at the pace of things. And so maybe we see Edge and Cody. Maybe we see Lashley and Edge. Maybe
I can see Rhea Ripley facing Bianca in one of these pay per views.
Yeah, I think this elevates Ripley. I mean, that's the thing, and maybe this was a point that I was trying to remember, is I think if Edge is able to help elevate, now I did remember my point as I talk here, as if Edge is there to take a hit in order to elevate others, then, and he's sort of, you know, they're sort of aware of it, you know, hey, you know, yeah, we're giving something up on out of an Edge to be a babyface, but we think as a heel, he can sink his teeth into material a little more, we can build a faction around him, and he can help give Damian Priest something that Priest is missing. He can help elevate Rhea Ripley in a way that she can't get on her own or mixing and matching with other women. And that was the argument that I heard for Becky going heel, which is they have babyface opponents they want Becky to work with. They looked at the lay of the land, and they're like, well, Becky wanted Liv Morgan to – she wanted to help elevate Liv Morgan. And the best way to do that is Becky to be heel and elevate Liv by feuding with her. Bianca Belair, they didn't want to get in her way. You know, they didn't want to get in the way of her being a popular centerpiece babyface. So if you turn Becky, now you're not – you know, Bianca stays at that top spot instead of getting knocked down a notch. And so I don't think we should think they're not aware that they're making a bit of a sacrifice or a popular wrestler's taking a hit. But the key is to then turn Liv Morgan into a star, make sure that Bianca Belair benefits from not being, you know, a crowded babyface field with Becky. And in this case, specifically with the Judgment Day, make sure that Edge is really, truly surrounded by people who he can help elevate. And I wouldn't mind at all having one or two other people join the group, maybe, you know, to form a tag team or somebody who just is kind of in a different career position than Damian Priest at this point. Robert, anything you want to add to that before I do throw back to Justin one more time?
Not a lot other than for your other example, I think it's a little bit different than the Becky thing in that nobody is like, it's not like Edge is getting cheered in these things. It's not that type of headwind
right.
That they're going against where it's more of an, everyone's rolling their eyes at what Edge is doing. So that might be a positive because then you don't have that thing to fight other than you just have the subtraction of Edge.
Yeah. And it was more the rationalization and motivation for doing something where they know they would take a hit, even if they're not perfect parallels, as you point out, in terms of fan reaction. Justin, back to you for anything else you want to bring up.
Yeah. Last thing. I spoke about this months ago and it's ringing true. I guess I can give it a little bit more time. This unifying the championship thing and not having a world champion on the show for weeks at a time, I just don't see how it's productive for a three-hour show. I mean, you know, people kept bringing up, he's a floating champion. He can float between brands. And it's like, it's a three-hour show. There's no huge overarching program. And like we mentioned before when I first got on the call, you're going up against the playoffs. You think you have try to have your biggest programs you can have and have some huge world title program. I mean, Cody's big motivation is to go after a world title, and there's no world title on the show, and he doesn't seem to care that much about it. I don't know why they did it. It hasn't worked for me. I don't know how you guys feel about it up to this point, but I just didn't like the idea back in February, and it's May, and I'm not really seeing benefits of it.
Robert, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I'm somewhat with you. I think that's why you would need to not do what you did tonight with Bianca. You would need then, okay, you don't have the men's singles title here, but we have one of our top champions in Bianca. Or you actually go through with your unification bout that you were theoretically building for this last pay-per-view, and okay, the singles title is over there, but the big tag belts are over here with Orton and Riddle. And I think the failure to do that exposes that even more. And it's a problem. And I wish they could just even if they just addressed it of like, why isn't there a champion on this show? If there is that, does Roman belong to Raw? I don't know how Roman is the only guy on a night when we saw Lacey Evans pop up out of nowhere. Roman's the only guy with actual brand exclusivity is a little bit of a weird thing.
When we talk about the floating champion too, we've got the issue of, can they have a floating champion like Roman Reigns who does not want to be showing up live on two TV shows per week on a regular basis? If you're going to do that, it makes more sense to have somebody who's willing to just kind of work full-time and be a workhorse for you. And I don't know that they've built up or protected somebody who's at that stage of their career like, you know, say John Cena was for a long time or, you know, other wrestlers. Reigns is going to have other opportunities outside of WWE. He's put in a lot of time. He's already got enough money where he could walk away and be fine. So he doesn't want to interrupt his life and his time with his family by flying twice a week to different towns. It's not like we're on SmackDown or on back-to-back nights where it's less of a hassle. So it's just not an opportune time to have a floating champion. I've talked about that in my pushback on people wanting the belts unified because we are in the conundrum now. A champion who's won to be at both shows, but so therefore you have an absentee show without a championship. And I felt like that was the reality of how things would go. And so far it is. And it's the downside of merging titles. Justin, any final words from you?
That's it. I appreciate you guys taking my call. You listen to the show. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Have a good evening.
Sure thing. Yep. Thanks. Robert, do you think they're going to, because a big part of the show we could have led with this as a talking point, was RK-Bro saying that they're going to show up on SmackDown and challenge the Usos. They want to merge, unify the tag team titles. That's their goal. That's what they're aiming for. Is that something you think that they'll go through with, or will Roman Reigns say no, and it's just a one-week, you know, I don't call it a rating stunt, but, you know, a bit of a hook to get people to tune in Friday for a newsworthy event, but they're going to move on from it?
I think they're going to keep it going, just because I think Orton is such an over character right now that I think there's some value and some interaction with him and Roman, more so than the whole tag situation. I think the tag situation is kind of our bridge to get there. I don't think there's going to be a merging of the, if they didn't merge the titles going into Backlash, which was, you know, kind of the implied main event until a couple of weeks ago, I don't think they're actually going to go through with it now, especially, you know, look at some of the issues we've just talked about. You know, it's not obviously not the same one-to-one with the tag titles and the world titles, but I think you're pointing out some valid issues of why they probably don't need to go in that direction right now.
Yeah. All right. Again, our number, if you want to join us midstream here on the show, is 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. If you are among the majority who listen on delay, don't forget, you can listen live and participate in the shows after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So consider this your invite to join us if it works out for your schedule to have us on in the background while you do whatever you do after wrestling shows, and also call in. All right, as noted, as promised, William in San Diego is up next. William, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What have you got for us today?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to talk about the Mustafa Ali and Ciampa match. I know that you specifically, Wade, have had a lot of high hopes for this feud, that they would deliver, you know, like a lot of high quality matches, hard hitting matches. It almost seems like they trolled you, like booking the first match to be like a special guest referee match with The Miz, just to kind of mess with you, you know, kind of thing, like a gimmicky thing to start off the feud, which I'm not like, you know, making a judgment call on it, but just thought it was kind of funny. But yeah, what do you guys think about, how things went tonight with Ciampa and, Mustafa, and, especially yeah. what do you guys think it does for Ciampa when, you know, there's like all these pin attempts where, you know, you can count to six and the match has barely gone like 3 minutes and Ciampa's having like a hard time kicking out, without The Miz holding out for, you know, holding off his count.
Yeah, if you were hoping for Ciampa to be in a feud with Mustafa Ali, that where Ciampa was part of the story and getting a push, this was not an encouraging week. He didn't get a ring entrance, and he was just sort of this bystander as they were as Miz was doing his thing with Ali. And then, yeah, I mean, he was. Clearly going to lose unless you make the argument, which I have, and I think there's something to it, that a wrestler has no incentive to exert themselves kicking out if they haven't heard a second hand slap yet. If, you know, like fans will count along when the ref is bumped and they'll count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and like, oh, they would have been pinned. Well, no, because the wrestler on their back isn't hearing the hand slap the mat. They have no incentive to kick out if they're on their back, and it's going to take a lot of energy to kick out. They're not about to lose, so why bother? And so you can make the argument Ciampa, you know, was sort of milking the moment because he knew Miz was slow counting. I don't know how much of that resonates with viewers who are watching and thinking that way, but, I mean, in the real world, it doesn't mean Ciampa would have lost multiple times. But it did make him look good, and it's unfortunate. You know, Ciampa is someone that Vince McMahon is clearly not excited about. He's just getting some time to be a gatekeeper, utility veteran with some name value that Vince McMahon looks at his size and his age and his history of injuries and just goes, we'll use you, but, you know, we're not going to do much with you. I'm still holding out hope that we actually get an Ali Ciampa match or two or three that turns him into stars. But it looks like Ciampa's just the transition for Ali to move into something perhaps with Theory and more with Edge. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to make the same point on the visual win. I've always thought that glad someone else said that. That like, yeah, the guy's not kicking out because he doesn't need to. He's Ciampa's just a prop in this. That's clearly all he is, and it's not very good either because this Mustafa character is, I think, a dead on arrival. Mustafa doesn't do a good job of communicating whatever this character is. I don't know whose fault that is, him or the office. And he just, I mean, he looks completely outclassed by the Miz out there as far as, as far as the personality. And I don't think the skill deficit between the two of them is at that. It's just kind of the way it's all being presented. I think the Miz was kind of the only one that looked okay coming out of this tonight.
Yeah, they didn't have when I say they didn't have confidence in Ciampa, they didn't in Miz either. I'm sorry, in Ali either, because they put Miz out there as a special referee, and it almost came across like, well, we know you're not going to watch Ali against Ciampa, but if we put Miz out there, he's a star, and he can keep this entertaining. I disagree a little bit on Ali, but I know where you're coming from. I think Mustafa Ali needs a mission statement, but I'm happy that he doesn't have some pasted-on, phony, baloney heel act that plays off of, you know, stuff that just feels outdated and uncomfortable. But Daniel Bryan, you know, what was his gimmick? It took a while to kind of have one, but the crowd was into him because he was so good and he was so genuinely likable. And so with Ali, I think maybe the goal is that they're just going to let him be a dude. You're going to let him be a likable guy who people feel they know, and I think he's really likable, and he comes across as just smart, well-spoken, motivated, level-headed, and decent. And I'm okay with that being a character on a wrestling show full of – I mean, I'll take that over, you know, Mad Cat Moss cartoon characters. I'm not saying you wouldn't, Robert. That said, I'd like to see Ali have a little bit more of a mission statement. If he doesn't have it yet, maybe they have something in mind as the feud with Miz goes on, or perhaps he moves into a feud with Theory where he kind of finds that voice that's going to be the hook for fans who are looking for that answer to the question. If you're watching a show with someone who hasn't watched WWE in a while or ever, they go, oh, what's this guy about? Right now with Mustafa, you don't really have an answer except how he relates to the annoying heel he's opposite of. And so it'd be nice if Ali, and Ali's been very creative and self-sufficient when it comes to defining his character in the past. So maybe we'll get that in the next couple weeks, Robert, on the bright side. But I think Ali can wrestle his way, whether it's with Ciampa or others, into being a really popular wrestler among WWE fans. And then you just hope that crowd reaction leads to a little bit more of investment in commitment by Vince.
Yeah, I think he has to dial it back a little bit, though. I thought his performance hasn't been great in it as well. And again, it looks, and I don't blame him necessarily, it looks like everyone has just been trying a little too hard with it. And then when you're kind of basing the feud off of Twitter, and not even in a good way, off of the meta backstage stuff, that never really goes well. So I think he needs a bit of a reset button with all this, if he's going to find that lane. I don't know what side of the bullish bearish is the negative one, though, but whatever the one that the arrow isn't pointing very high on, that's kind of where I'm at with Mustafa at this point.
Yeah, sounds good. William, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Becky Lynch and Asuka segment backstage. And, I had to bring up the whole topic of, you know, Becky as a heel versus a babyface, because I feel at this point it's kind of like talking about the 3-hour Raw. Like, I feel like everyone's already just made their point on it. But I did see something backstage in that segment, and, it just may be confirmation bias or wishful thinking or whatever, because I'm kind of firmly in the camp of that Becky should be a face. But it just seems that the dynamic and the chemistry between the two of them during the segment, it was like, it was more of a comedic segment more than like, like an actual feud. They were like standing there, like a feet apart from each other, not really like, you know, wanting to get each other's throats in like a serious way. It was more like comedic. It was almost like RK-Bro kind of energy, like early RK-Bro where, you know, it like almost like an odd couple, like the early stages of an odd couple tag team.
And you're talking about Asuka, her and Asuka backstage, or what?
Yeah, Asuka and Becky. Yeah. With the, you know, the whole she was struggling a little, Asuka, to get that promo out, but the whole thing about, oh, you know, you told me that you were going to go be a mommy, but now you came back and you're like a baby, and she was like acting kind of, you know, silly and childish, and Becky was kind of selling it in her like own comedic way. And yeah, it just felt like I mentioned, it felt like very early RK-Bro kind of, in that, you know, there's like, it felt like the early beginnings of an odd couple.
I don't think they're
attacking.
Going for that. Yeah, I don't think they're going for that. But, I mean, I see what you're saying. Asuka has just come across, and I know they just tell her to ham it up, and that's what she's been doing, you know, in a way since NXT, but certainly more so on the main roster. But it feels undignified. I felt like her time away, this was a chance to bring her back and refresh her character. And I look at her, and it feels like, undignified how they have her act. And I think, you know, Vince McMahon and others get a kick out of her and her accent and broken English and her mannerisms, and they're amplifying an aspect of her genuine personality, and I get all that, but I think there should be room for someone who's a more serious athlete. She can still be entertaining in the ways that WWE wants their characters to be entertaining, but still have some dignity and some seriousness as an athlete. And I just think that isn't there. You know, they're more worried about her filling TV segments by being colorful and over the top than they are in building her up as a serious person. Robert, what do you think of any of that William and I just talked about?
Yeah, I think they generally have a decent chemistry with each other in those segments. And I think Becky's character is not necessarily unserious, but a little delusional, and that is what the character is supposed to be, and those are the notes that they're hitting. But the problem is, which you identified, Wade, is the over-the-top nature, where she's basically still the same character as when she was tagging with Kairi Sane, and it was pretty outlandish, that it all just kind of comes across mid-card when you're watching this. Like, this should be with the Carmella and Zelina phase of it, which is completely out of step with how Asuka's presented, like, the other 45% of the time, where she's this, like, deadly killer that the rest of the division is afraid of. And I think it just – it's not that these guys have to be – these men and women have to be completely non-dimensional in their presentation, but the whole point of the segment is to laugh at Asuka, not to get behind Asuka or to get mad at her if she was a heel and all that. So I think you kind of achieved nothing, which I thought was a theme of Raw tonight, where I felt a lot of guilty pleasure with a lot of the stuff I saw tonight, which I knew I knew wasn't good, but I thought even that segment, I got a kick out of it. You could see probably, you know, Vince and Pritchard and Kevin Dunn getting a kick out of that, but it doesn't lead to anything productive.
Yeah. Look at that funny foreigner. Isn't she wacky? Is she money? If you're just leaning that hard into that, I 24/7 characters, comedy relief, that's one thing, but I just feel there's room for Asuka to be something better than this. But yeah, I get what you're saying about, you know, guilty pleasure. And I mean, Becky is really good at everything she does. Adam Pearce is really good playing the straight man role that he does. And I think it's good to have somebody kind of as the control group of the outlandishness and larger than life characters that surround him. But sometimes you can go too far with it. William, anything else you want to bring up?
I liked Backlash yesterday. I thought it was a good show overall, but going into it, you know, if I'm being honest, I was kind of already like looking past it, not looking forward to it. And, you know, tonight it is kind of the same. I'm more kind of just looking forward to like Hell in a Cell and whatever comes next, Money in the Bank. But it seems, you know, I know we all disagree with the way they book Hell in a Cell these days, where it's just like a pay-per-view gimmick and, you know, they'll just throw whatever match they can in there, regardless of whether it feels like it should be Hell in a Cell. It, you know, it just happens to be June, so yeah, let's put these two in Hell in a Cell. But, you know, putting that aside and coming to terms with the fact that they're going to book at least one, if not two, Hell in a Cell matches for that pay-per-view, what do you guys think are those matches going to be? Obviously, I think the top contender right now is Cody and Seth, but I don't know if anything else feel at that level.
I think they have a number of candidates, but Seth and Cody feels like a sure thing. The closest thing to a sure thing. Robert, what else comes to mute the background noise and William there. What else comes to mind, Robert, for you among the candidates in the, you know, Charlotte Rousey, something with Becky and Bianca and Asuka. I don't think they're going to do Drew Roman in a Hell in a Cell right away. I think we can rule that out. But, you know, looking at even both brands, anything else jump out and come to mind?
Well,
Styles Edge, too, I guess I could probably.
Yeah, I think those two, although I could see the Styles Edge one not quite happening because that is kind of transitioning into maybe a faction tag team feud. With that said...
Balor and Styles against Priest and Edge, probably.
Yeah, I do think there could be a tag team match in there, and it could be the one we were talking about earlier, some variation of the Usos and the and Riddle and Randy, or if it even, you know, they could theoretically reset the six-man, so you have a little more... Drew and Roman interaction as you're sort of hopefully kind of trying to kick that can down the road.
Sorry, Robert, I keep interrupting. The match last night, though, didn't feel like a setup for a grudge match in Hell in a Cell. Like, that's why I would say as far as that match goes, it doesn't feel like that's where we're heading, but they could change that based on whatever they do Friday.
I do think, though, the Ronda Charlotte issue, I think, is dead for a while. I think they would probably go away from that, and I don't know that you need a Ronda Rousey Hell in a Cell match, you know, with 3 to 4 weeks of build on a fresh feud. So
with a cast on her arm.
Yeah, which she would be allowed to use according to 2002 Hell in a Cell rules. So hopefully precedent would take over. But you know, you never know how that goes. So I think the Cody and Seth one, I'm leaning on something within the tag division. I hadn't thought about the AJ one. I'm really struggling after that unless they do a non-title women's match and do, you know, Bianca and Becky in there. But I still think none of that's really hot enough yet. But again, we have a couple weeks, so they can be built.
I am, by the way, I don't think they should name a pay-per-view after a match. I think they should give up on that, and they should do a Hell in a Cell match when it's called for. When a feud culminates, when you feel like it's worth doing a third or fourth match in a feud, and you want to pull the Hell in a Cell out. And when you put it on a calendar and it just becomes something that's just, you know, a fait accompli, it's going to happen no matter what. It takes away the sense that, ooh, this match earned Hell in a Cell status. No, it's just that time of year. So I'm against that, against the pay-per-view being named after it. I get the marketing people are like, what? Well, that doesn't make any sense. We need posters that say the name on it, and we need to get those posters and all the publicity out months ahead of time, and we have to plan, and you don't know how this works. And I'm like, well, you don't know how pro wrestling works. You know how marketing works, and sometimes that gets in the way of telling the right kind of pro wrestling story. So all that said, I'm fine with them just doing one Hell in a Cell. Just do Seth and Cody. Don't do any other. Don't do anything else. Just have one Hell in a Cell match. You don't need to do a second one. All right, I will throw back to William. William, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I want to go back to the AJ and Judgment Day stuff. To me, it seems like, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but it almost seems like they're building for a six-person tag, you know, Judgment Day versus AJ and Finn Balor and Liv Morgan. Or at least that's what I thought before neither of them came out to save Liv when she was getting, you know, her legs potentially injured by Ripley. It just seemed kind of funny how Balor came out all nonchalantly, and I thought he was coming out to save her, but no, he was just there for his match. He didn't really seem to care much. But, yeah, what do you guys think about that possibility? And also, what do you guys think about the match that we saw tonight between Rhea and Liv? Because they were kind of in the middle of that feud that I, you know, going into Backlash, I thought, you know, maybe that's something that they could have put into, I don't know, maybe like a kickoff match or something. But they saved it for tonight, and I don't think we, from my personal opinion, I don't think we missed out on much. I thought it was just okay. So, yeah, what do you guys think?
It felt like this was a match where Liv was a body in the ring, kind of like Ciampa, to take a beating from Ripley to get Rhea Ripley over. It wasn't like a total squash, but it was pretty one-sided and definitive, which, by the way, is the right thing to do. You know, you've got to have wrestlers who you're ready to push hard, beating wrestlers who have some credibility, and Liv Morgan has some credibility having visited the world title picture. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I thought that was the ultimate goal, and I think they communicated it well. Like, one of these is much better than the other as far as what we're seeing in canon right now, and that was the way to go. I don't know how much they want to devalue Liv, and I don't know if it did devalue Liv. Personally, I don't see a lot in Liv. I don't think Becky Lynch elevated her to the level that maybe she wanted to, but I think there is a good amount of fans and a good amount of support that she seems to have from the company. So I don't think this completely destroys her. I don't know that we're going to get a trios match just because of the Liv factor. Like, she would kind of – yes, they're feuding, but she doesn't really have a connection to the other two men in that way. They could do it. I don't necessarily see it.
It didn't seem like that's where they were heading either. Okay. Anything else for you?
I think I had something else, but I forget. So I'll just contradict myself real quick and say that I think Becky actually turned babyface tonight when she called out the stupidity of having Asuka having to beat Bianca in order to get an opportunity to beat Bianca for the title, and also saying, like, you know, how does it make sense that Asuka's the one getting the shot when Liv was the one who got the pin last week and all that.
yes.
So, yeah. Baby,
I wouldn't
Becky
call that
Lynch
a babyface.
Clearly a...
I'm not sure that's a – I know – I totally get the bit you're doing, William. It's not so much a babyface turn as just, like, I don't know, a heel making good points at the expense of – it's more just making WWE look kind of buffoonish. In their logic, I think they should have come up with something better than that to explain the opportunities he's getting. But to script Becky to just tear it apart and deconstruct the logic is kind of curious. But it is what Becky should do. At least it rang true. That's what I would do if I were in her shoes: is point out the stupidity to the WWE official. Robert.
Yeah, I hate these contenders match when they're against like the champ. I wish we did that in MMA. I wish like you could beat the champ, and 6 months later to say you've earned your title shot because you beat the
yeah.
champ. That would be great. And Becky Lynch is going to have to owe Kevin Owens some money for being the other heel on the show that always just makes the points that are logical and make sense regardless of what else is going on in the book.
Yes.
That happens a lot with Kevin Owens regardless of the feud, and now it's seeping into Becky as well.
Total gimmick infringement. Yep. All right, William, did you think of anything else you want to bring up, or ready to wrap up?
No, I think that's it. You guys made the comparison, Kevin Owens. That's who I was also thinking of during that segment. And, I was obviously half joking. They didn't turn Becky face. Obviously, by the way that she came out, and they immediately turned that crowd noise down. Sound effect all the way up. People, I just feel like it was one of the most blatant examples we've seen in a while. Like, people stand up. Brady wanted to cheer, and then they just turned the audio all the way down and have everyone boo.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Thanks, William. Always good to hear from you. I'm always paranoid when I hear like a Cody chant. Like, well, is that just recorded and piped in through the speakers, and then fans just sort of join in because they are followers, or is it happening organically? And I don't like not knowing, like if. Because a big part of wrestling is that live focus group. Vince McMahon always talked about it. And if they're just disregarding it in order to create this false reality of who's over and who's not and who's over in what way and what their crowd reactions are, it takes a lot of fun out of wrestling. And it obviously it's not good when you're casting characters in a way where fans either aren't into them relative to their push, or they're into them in a completely different way than how you're framing them. I guess that's embarrassing, but the answer as a promoter isn't to then put in false cheers and turn volume up and down and pipe things in. It's just augment what you're doing. Just if you don't suffer the consequences of your decisions, you're going to keep making bad decisions. And I worry for pro wrestling and WWE if they aren't – if they're now not even being held accountable to live audiences anymore in terms of their crowd reaction. They're already not really held accountable in terms of ticket sales or pay-per-view buys. You know, so a lot of the metrics are gone that used to dictate whether they were doing, you know, making good or bad decisions. And now you just create this false reality. So I don't know. I mean, they got tons of money rolling in. You know, the quarterly financials are kind of boring now. It's like, yep, record revenue because somebody wrote them a big check and it has completely zero connection to any decision they made in the last 2 years. But big money coming in. It's like it was a lot more fun to look at the network numbers and even before that, the pay-per-view numbers and see, you know, how shows were doing and what attendance was like. And yeah, it's just it's a different industry right now because of the landscape of how revenue was earned. Robert, anything you want to add to that, or should we move on to the next caller?
I'll just say quickly, the piped in noise too, it kills. There's a difference to it. It kills the ambiance of what those pops used to have when they would have them, because they're just a little. They were a little more unorganized when you have that natural flavor to them. Where
yeah.
Now they're such in unison, it has kind of a Thunderdome feel just with the people as props now versus what they used to be on screens.
Yeah, good point. All right, we'll go next to Kyle in Baltimore. You're still welcome to join us if you have joined our live stream midstream. Feel free to push one on your keypad if you've already called in, if you want to be on the show, or call if you're just listening on the internet, 347-215-8558, and push one to join the conversation. All right, Kyle, thanks for calling. What's in your mind tonight about Raw?
So I just recently got done watching Alexa's return and Becky attacking Asuka and stuff like that. So first I'll get to Alexa. So I'm glad that she's back. I know that and that she looks really different too in terms of before. She's no longer coming out with, well, she's not coming out with the doll, but she's coming out with looking like herself again. Someone brought back her theme music, but then they changed it back to the whole playground music thing, but I guess it really doesn't matter. This woman is over. She gets cheered no matter what. She gets seen. She's a big star at this point. And so I'm happy she's back. I'm glad that hopefully she'll stay back and stop disappearing. No more of this therapy stuff. But it was good to see her. I'm glad that she's back. I'm glad that she's going to be a contender for Bianca at some point in the future because she needs opponents, even though she's a babyface. But what do you think about, I don't know if you talk about Alexa coming back or not, but we get your thoughts on that.
I wasn't a fan of Alexa seeming like she was just there as background because, one, that takes something away from Alexa Bliss and what I think should be kind of a big deal when she returns. Also, it takes a little bit of the spotlight away from Sonya Deville and what they're trying to do with her character. I don't know. It just felt like it was kind of random and it was a bit of a distraction. I know they were just trying to tell the story that Sonya was just distraught over losing her job in management. Your thoughts, Robert, on the Bliss return?
Well, I think they need her right now. I think she's a welcome addition to what has largely been a stagnant division for a while. But her being sort of shoehorned into that story and there's not really, it's not like Sonya had fired Alexa months back or something like that. So it didn't really tie into anything. So all of that was a little weird. I also do think that we've talked a lot tonight about mission statements and that kind of thing. We're going to need to hear from Alexa pretty quick on this. Cause she just can't come out and just be cheerleader Alexa all of a sudden after, you know, it was 3 years or whatever it was that she wasn't that character. So we need some of that for it. And we know she can talk and that's one of her strengths. So that's my cautious optimism. I was surprised though, how kind of good it felt to see her though. Someone that I think is a good performer, but not someone that I've necessarily been all in the past you know, she was kind of a welcome sight on this show. So I don't know what that says about the show or about her, but I am overall though glad that she's back.
Kind of like John Moxley, Dean Ambrose told me when he left WWE, you know, he would get handed crap and just fight against it, push back, but then eventually just go, okay, I'll make the best of it because I'm representing myself on TV and you're paying me to do the best job I can with what you give me. And I feel Bliss does that, but I'd like to know what she wants her character to be and let her, I mean, you know, you can't trust all wrestlers in this way. And some wrestlers are good wrestlers and they're good at executing plans, but they're terrible self-bookers. But I would like to at least hear her out and get an idea of what she would be excited about doing and where she would fit in, and let her have, you know, a mission statement that, that Vince McMahon can get behind, but that she can also believe in. You know, she had Lily the Doll with her, but we didn't get a lot of special effects or spooky stuff. So maybe they don't know yet, or maybe this is a transition point. I didn't really get a sense of it watching. Kyle, how about you?
It just looked like she just looked like herself again. That's what it looked like to me. Like before, she looked like a child. Like that's what I appreciated from before. She looked like an actual adult. And I don't know if that'll continue or not with her coming out as her, you know, just looking more like an adult. She comes out the doll, whatever, it comes with it. But if she was come out with the doll, that's fine. But she still looks like it's, but have her look like an adult like before, and not like a child with the whole ponytail stuff. As if so, this is a good step in the right direction. And then her theme music, it was like I don't know if you noticed when it started, it was the normal theme music from before, and like how it was before in 2017 and 16, and then it transitioned to that playground theme. So I don't know what that's all about. I don't know why they decided to do that. So I don't know. I have faith that this is going to be, they'll keep her like this moving forward, I would think, because if not, why bring her back like that? That's the case. So that's my thought. The doll theme, just have to accept it. This is something they'll just keep continuing to have her bring out, this that doll, but whatever, it is what it is. People don't care about it in the audience. People like a podcast can complain about it, but she gets big reactions like she always does. Isn't really a bad thing. So for tonight anyway, it's kind of a good thing. So we'll see how the weeks progress with her throughout the few weeks and see how she's going to be booked and who she's going to be feuded with too. I'll be interested as well. The first feud was going to be with. I was going to talk about that. I was going to be about Becky. And
go ahead and move. I have no idea what they're doing with Bliss yet. I mean, I don't think we got enough information this week to really do anything but wildly speculate.
Okay, so with Becky and Asuka, it's I'm kind of glad that they're feuding with each other. I think that's awesome from last few weeks. Kind of like Liv and Rhea. But where does that leave Bianca? She's kind of like I kind of assume and thought that they were going to do at least Becky and Bianca for Hell in a Cell to at least kill that, to blow up that match inside the cell, because that to me that makes the most sense. But clearly they're not doing that right now because Becky's going after Asuka, but she also went after Bianca. So I don't know if that's going to lead to with Bianca, because I just assume that for Hell in a Cell, for like a blow off, they'll do Bianca and Becky inside the cell, but if she's going to go after Asuka, where does that leave Bianca? So what do you think about that?
I mean, it'd be pretty Raw heavy to do Cody, Seth, and Bianca and Becky, but it was kind of SmackDown heavy this last time. I don't know. I mean, Reigns and the Usos are SmackDown, but I don't know. They can heat it up. I mean, obviously Becky yanking Bianca out of the ring and beating her up, you know, might be enough to just go, let's settle this in the Hell in a Cell. I mean, I think it's a top candidate if they are going to do more than one match, Robert. More than one Hell in a Cell match, I should say.
Yeah, and it's a feud that's been going theoretically since last summer. So it was in that way, it would kind of fit the Hell in a Cell parameters. But there's been so much start and stop with it that I don't know that the momentum is necessarily there. And again, maybe if you just want to do one cell match per show, definitely Cody and Seth would get the nod there. I am curious why the hell that Lacey Evans promo aired on Raw, though. Was it a timing issue and they needed to throw that up there? Why was that there? And how is she going to screw up the top of this women's division? I don't know what the prognostication is for that, but I would say kind of we should keep that flagged as we sort of kind of figure out where this women's division is going in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there is a risk, just talk about Lacey briefly here, that fans would be very sympathetic to her story. But they're going to run out of patience with WWE and doing 6 weeks in a row of this. Now we get the best of version. I feel bad because I think people are like, okay, I believe Lacey's story. She seems likable. She's been through a lot. But are they just going to resent her push and her character by the time, you know, she really comes out? I mean, Robert, what do you think? I mean, this is 6 weeks of her sighing and telling her, you know, a story that nobody wants to boo or be mean about it. But there does come a point where something is heavy-handed enough that fans are like, we love you, Lacey, but we don't really anticipate wildly cheering you because it just feels so, and I hate the term, shoved down our throats, but I think it's just, you know, overused and sort of cliche. But if it ever applied, I mean, this is starting to apply here.
Oh, definitely. Because I think, like, the first week of it was, I wasn't a fan of it. In general, and I think I just have like a bias toward Lacey Evans where I just don't think she's very good at it. So I tried to put that aside when I watched it. But it was like, okay, I could see what they were going for. I heard, you know, her talk about these things on a podcast in the past and thinking, hey, maybe they should incorporate that a little bit into the story. But as you said, you go 6 weeks of it. And I feel like when there's character study like that where they go so deep into it for consecutive weeks, it kind of never really works out because it is a wrestling show. So you have to see some sort of payoff in a very short term. And I think tonight on Raw, I don't know what the crowd sweetening was like, but it didn't seem like the crowd was very, you know, invested in the video package on this thing. And quite frankly, and this might sound mean or uncompassionate, it does feel out of place on a wrestling show. A wrestling show like this that is so frivolous, and then we have to turn the page to this thing. It did feel awkward. Again, like you hate to say negative things about it because there's every reason to believe that this is the actual truth, that they're showing photographs and all that, and it is an inspiring and a heart-wrenching thing. But wrestling can be a brutal place, and you know, this isn't JR interviewing Mick Foley over the course of a couple of weeks to kind of get some backstory. So I think this is going to die an interesting death. I don't even know if the fans turn on it necessarily, because it might be like, you know, when Roman came back with his cancer diagnosis and he wasn't the hottest guy in the world, because it wasn't like a booing thing. It's just something we don't like. And at the end of the day, and I hate to be so negative about it, it's still Lacey Evans. So where can it ever actually lead to?
I know. And I can imagine somebody in the front row or, you know, in the crowd holding up a sign going, I got problems too, lady, just wrestle. You know, everybody has had her issues, but I think a lot of fans are like, I don't sit here and just hold you hostage for 3 minutes a week to hear about my, you know, terrible upbringing or, you know, issues that I've had, you know, just wrestle. So anyway, it's kind of a touchy issue, but Kyle, any closing words from you?
I mean, the whole Lacey stuff, I don't really care about that either. It was so completely annoying. I don't know why she has to bring that up. You know, she wants to be a babyface, that's fine, but it could have been a different way. My last thing is just that I just hope with when it came to tonight, I just hope for that they, at least in the women's division, that they focus on a certain wrestler to build up for Bianca, because she can't miss another pay-per-view without wrestling. So I really hope they'll find some type of direction for Bianca and see where she goes, because her not showing up on pay-per-view or not having any direction of Raw is not good. So hopefully they, whatever direction, if it's going to be Becky moving forward for Hell in a Cell, which she probably will do that, and then, or something like that, pick a lane for Bianca and stick with it so that she can have some type of direction on this show. But that's a digital call.
Thanks, Kyle. Good to hear from you. Robert, how do you feel about Bianca Belair's current position, her momentum, her character? Where is she?
I think she's largely been in a good place. She gets, from what we can tell, she gets really, really good reactions. And she's just kind of a good old baby face. And I don't even mean that in a patronizing way, in that, you know, she doesn't, you know, behave in such a ways where we're wondering why we're cheering for her. She's had decent opponents leading up to it. I thought she was featured fairly well in the main event last week. Her being off the pay-per-view only stands out because they don't do that often. Because, you know, every pay-per-view is some kind of Night of Champions. And when she wasn't on there, you did kind of notice it. So I don't mind if that's a trend going forward where they don't, you know, because they have so many titles and championships where they don't have them featured as much. I think in general she's in a good place, but Kyle does point out the problem that a lot of the champions have right now is with credible opponents, which, you know, Bianca theoretically has a credible opponent, say in Becky, but we've done that quite a bit. So I think it's really in the follow through of who it is for her to face, which will determine how the remainder of her reign really goes.
Yep, I agree. All right, we'll go to New Jersey next. Area code 732. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Chris from Hartford area, Connecticut. How are you?
Doing good. Good to hear from you. Did you attend tonight?
I did. It was actually my first show bringing my six-year-old son, so it was a nice experience.
Oh, cool. How do you like it?
He loved it. I mean, he was completely into the baby faces and then completely against the heels. He was the perfect kind of WWE kid and absolutely loved the experience.
So, tell us about it. What stood out being in the building tonight?
I think it's nice to see kind of post-COVID that really the buildings have come back to life and really everybody's embracing wrestling again, which is my first show really since COVID has hit. So it was nice to see that. And I think WWE, you know, as much as they've struggled with consistent storytelling through the years, it seems like in a lot of ways now they're getting better at it. And I think I'm really starting to enjoy the week to week more. So seeing things like Cody and Seth and the Edge storyline, we're continuing on a track. It feels nice.
We had someone earlier mention how full the building looked based on the camera angles WWE chose. We saw the last row of the building was filled opposite of the hard cam. You got a much wider view than WWE gave us as TV viewers. How full was the venue in terms of all seats in the building other than those that obviously the stage blocks?
Yeah, it was probably about 80-85% filled. Most of the empties were on the hard cam side, but I was opposite the hard cam. We were pretty much filled up all the way to the last row there. And down below is all filled up. So it was good crowd.
Was the lower bowl, except for the hard cam section, just packed? And then the upper bowl, you know, half full? Or how would you describe it?
The upper bowl was pretty full. We were pretty packed in there in the 200s.
The whole U-shape from one edge of the stage to the other?
Yeah. And the hard cam side, it was a little lighter, but, it was still pretty full.
Yeah. So, you know, good crowd. And it's WWE's market. That's their area. And would you say the crowd – I mean, I remember when I went to my first post-Thunderdome era show last summer for SmackDown in Minneapolis. I mean, it was – the crowd was crazy enthusiastic. And, you know, we had no idea coming out of Performance Center and Thunderdome and no crowds and, you know, no fan reaction and a lot of booking blind, where you didn't really know what the crowd response was going to be to certain things that Vince McMahon had been booking. You didn't know if the product would be over, and the fans were just it was one of the most rambunctious crowds that I can remember for a standard show, you know, not a blockbuster show. It's just a SmackDown. How did that come across to you? I know you saw things through a different lens given who you went with in those circumstances, but did it seem like those who attended with a pretty full building were really into the product that Vince McMahon was serving up?
Similar to your experience for a more basic show, you know, not a pay-per-view or anything big, it was definitely a hot crowd. Even watching main event, you know, we got there just for the Apollo Crews match, and the crowd was in the Apollo Crews match. So we were definitely hot. I think as we got later on, we cooled off a bit. Once you got over the hill of the Cody match, things came down a little bit, and you wound into the Doudrop match and the Miz match. You know, they were winding down, but the first 2 hours, the crowd was into it.
Tell us who was most popular, who got the biggest reactions and, you know, was it all, you know, cheers and you know, cheers or boos, just who got the biggest star reactions?
Cody, majorly over. Randy's a close second. The two of them are well above everybody else. And I think the differentiator there is that they weren't just getting big pops as they were coming in. They were getting continuous pops the match. Things would calm down and there would be a Cody chant or there'd be a Randy chant. You can tell that the two of them were well above over everybody else. Alexa Bliss and AJ and Finn, they were behind them. You know, they got a nice pop, but it wasn't consistent through time. On the heel side, Theory Theory is over on the heel side. He was getting boos consistently. And I don't know if it's because he was opposite Cody, but he was definitely over as a heel.
Interesting, interesting. Robert, jump on in with a question for Chris.
Sure. We just came off talking about the Lacey Evans video segment. Did that air the building, and what was the vibe like in the building as that was airing?
It did air in the building, and I think as it started, you got some emotion from the crowd, but as it kind of dragged on a little bit, and I hate to say it dragged on because I know it is a tough story for her to tell, but it did drag on a little bit in the building, and you could tell the crowd she was starting to lose the crowd. And I don't know if it was because it was a summary of the previous 5 weeks or whatever it was, but she had them in the beginning, but it didn't last long.
How did the audience respond to Alexa Bliss and her return, and did it seem like this like really cool surprise and we love her or curiosity over what her character was going to be?
Big pop when she came out. And I think when the music hit, we kind of expected a more traditional Alexa Bliss because it was her more traditional music. The doll popped up and I think people came down a little bit came out and she started acting a little bit more like the traditional Alexa. It built back up, so it was kind of a little bit up and down there. I think the biggest surprise for the crowd was just how quick the match was. Going over that fast, I think, took the wind out of the sails of her response.
Did the crowd seem to know who Tommaso Ciampa was, and how did they respond to Mustafa Ali?
We definitely knew Ciampa, at least in my section. He got a big pop because they didn't televise their entrances, but they gave entrances in the building, so there was a big pop for Ciampa's entrance. Ali, he really didn't get much of a reaction there. Miz got the reaction, and I love Ciampa. I think he'd be a perfect fit for something like Edge's group. I think he's wasted where he is right now. That whole segment, you can tell, was based around the Miz, and the crowd kind of knew that. But they definitely knew who Ciampa was.
Yeah. Robert, jump in with a question if you got one.
The Kevin Owens Ezekiel stuff, was the crowd, kind of going along with it, laughing at it? Were they, apathetic? Did they not like it? What was the reception to that?
It was big time over with the crowd, and I think a lot of that goes to Kevin Owens. He's just so fantastic in the role that he's in. Even the segment backstage with Otis, that was over. He plays it so well. So even the reveal of Ken as Kevin got a big laugh. It was definitely a good segment in the building.
Yeah, Ezekiel is one of the surprises right now that I'm kind of, have to keep an open mind about and watch how crowds are responding, because it seemed like it was, sort of this dead on arrival, you've got to be kidding me deal at the beginning. And, I don't think it's just Kevin Owens who gets credit. I think he gets a ton of credit, maybe most of the credit, but the storyline itself and how committed they are to it, and then Ezekiel playing it the way that he is, working in kind of a weird, not top of the card type thing, but sort of entertaining. Robert, I don't know if this felt into your guilty pleasure zone that you talked about earlier, but
that's where the concept started, was with that.
Yeah,
segment.
Yeah. So
they played a clip of Ezekiel talking about meeting Shawn Michaels in the building. Did they televise that?
No.
That got a big reaction from the crowd. Everybody was cracking up. They brought up Ezekiel, and it was like a WWE 24 special, and he talked about his older brother Elias taking him to meet Shawn Michaels and taking a picture of him and his dream of becoming a WWE superstar, and it was pretty funny.
Nice. Is there anything else you want to share? Anything surprise you tonight, Chris?
I think the biggest surprise for me is Becky didn't get much of a reaction coming out. And I don't know if it was because the crowd was just so drained by the end of the night, but she got almost no reaction. Sasha got a much bigger reaction than she did, and so did Alexa.
Anything else stand out? What are you going to remember about tonight, 6 months and 6 years from now?
Yeah, it was a pretty standard night for WWE. Like I said, I'm just happy that we're starting to get more consistent storytelling. So
yeah.
For me, it was enjoyable again. If I rewind back 10, 15 years where we were actually getting week-over-week stories and I enjoyed watching Raw every week, this was one of those days where it was a really nice experience you know, being told the story. And obviously, you know, I'll remember, you know, my 6-year-old's first time there, just his reactions were, were epic.
Yeah, cool. Robert, any last question you have for Chris?
No, I think I asked everything I was curious about.
Yeah, and Chris, anything else you want to add?
No, thanks, guys. I'm a very long-time listener, but first time kind of calling in here, so appreciate the chat.
Well, if it ever works out when you're not attending and you're just watching the show, give us a call. We'd love to make it a semi-regular thing if it works for you.
Awesome. I appreciate the wait.
Yeah, you bet. Good contribution. Thanks, Chris. If you want to be an on-site correspondent for a future episode of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, you are invited to let me know ahead of time. Send an email to wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com and let us know what show you're going to. Put the name of the city in the subject line and, of course, the date of the show, and we'll be in touch, and then we can look for you on the switchboard, and you can contribute like Chris did tonight. All right, we'll wrap up with another phone call, and then we'll zip through some emails before we sign off on our Raw Post Show here, and we'll go to, let's see, I want to make sure doing this right. Yep, Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
My first question is on RK-Bro. I think they'll get the Rise of the Rockers, and maybe someone will get a title shot against Roman Reigns. Like, I don't know if it's a title shot, but I remember Shawn Michaels wrestling Ric Flair and Marty Jannetty cost them the match. So you feel like maybe Matt Riddle cost and Randy Orton a title match against Roman Reigns, and then that leads to the breakup.
What do you think, Robert?
I don't see that happening because I think they're getting so much mileage on a kind of thin roster on Raw right now out of the team. I wouldn't put it past them. And if they are going to, when they do eventually break up, it'll probably be because one of them obtains, you know, a single success that the other one becomes jealous of. So I think that is a very likely way that they're going to go. I don't think it's happening in the interim future, though.
I don't either. I think they got a good thing going right now. There is such – it's so fun watching Randy and Riddle. I mean, there's a joy of performance. They're popular. They're likable. There's a chemistry. Why would you mess with that? Like, the destiny for Randy and Riddle is to be separated in the draft and be two standout singles wrestlers, and then you build up to a year before you reunite, and it turns into a big deal that they team together post-draft 2024. Like, to me, that's a much more obvious way to go than this sort of fake inevitableness that I think everybody has that, oh, someone's going to turn on someone. And if they do it, I think it'll be a bad move and a disappointment. Ryan, what else?
My second question is on Alexa Bliss. How long do you think it's going to take for someone rips up that doll or steals it from her? Like, who do you think that could be? And do you have, like, a timetable of when that could happen? Because that seems like an obvious storyline going with her return.
I don't know that I want them to build a – I mean, I'm not saying you're endorsing it either, but I don't know if I want them to build a storyline around Alexa Bliss and her doll. Robert, when we say we want a mission statement, I'm not quite sure that's what we're looking for, is a bigger investment in the doll being the impetus for what she does next. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either. Like, I could see some logic to it, but I think, like, they already did that with Charlotte a few months ago. Like, I thought that was supposed to be the ceremonial, you know, kind of doing that. I get the feeling she's bringing it out so they can sell some of them. And I think that's why it's there. But, and it's a way of sort of, you know, still acknowledging that character. And as we've talked about the music a few times and its remix. So I don't know that they're going to do it. If they do it, though, they'll probably do it pretty quickly. And it'd be like Sonya, on, you know, because she's so angry with her demotion or something like that. It's probably where they would go if they went in that direction.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Ryan, what's your third question for us?
My final question is, I noticed that Cody Rhodes is doing a promo for the Money in the Bank, which is in a huge Las Vegas stadium. Said, could you see them maybe having like the Las Vegas, like two members of the Las Vegas Raiders wrestling for the tag team titles against the Usos or The Rock appearing, or how are they going to throw out this giant arena? Because it's going to look pretty embarrassing if they can't do that.
Ryan, how much do you want to wager that they give two members of an NFL team a tag team title shot because they're in Las Vegas at the stadium? I'll give you 100 to 1. If you bet $1 and you're right, I'll give you 100.
Well, it was just the idea. Like, there's like 100 different ideas you could do. You could have The Rock, you know,
yeah,
make an appearance. You could have Steve Austin, like, do a second match thing against Seth Rollins. You could do any number of things to try to sell these tickets. That's just the classic example how you could attempt
yeah,
to
yeah.
try.
No, no, I know. I'm just saying, like, I just think they're going to just do the show. I don't think, because it's in an NFL stadium and in Vegas, they feel they need to do more than just their standard show, and I think they'll sell plenty of tickets. I do not think they're going to prematurely rush Rock or Austin onto the show because it's at a stadium. I mean, it's July 4th weekend. It's a weird date. It's not a marquee name. I think they still want to save their big stuff for SummerSlam and Mania. Yes, they're experimenting with Rumble and Money in the Bank at stadium shows, and good for them, but I do not see them blowing up a big, you know, I mean, it's bad enough that Saudi Arabia – well, I shouldn't say bad enough. It's Saudi Arabia shows get a lot of big appearances and comebacks and matches, and I just don't think they can spread it out anymore just because they happen to be in a stadium. I think they're just hoping the brand itself sells. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, well, and the trick about it is you have a lot of stadium shows, like an unusual amount of stadium shows in a pretty short time. And I think of those markets that they're going to – Vegas might be one of the easier ones. It's one that I think they've traditionally done fairly well in. And I think that's a show with a gimmick that you don't necessarily need the celebrity. Not like they wouldn't take a Rock or Austin if he came around. But I think there's probably enough confidence that they can sell this show. I will say, I think it might be going head-to-head. You said 4th of July weekend with a UFC pay-per-view, which are usually in that same building. But I have to do a little bit of research on that.
UFC does the indoor building, and WWE's doing the stadium.
They do T-Mobile. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah. They do T-Mobile Arena, and here where the Raiders play. That may be a factor. May not be. I do think, though, if they keep doing these stadium shows, they may become more and more reliant on, you're saying, like that Saudi Arabia model where they're pulling everything and offering all the money to make them feel like special shows. Also, I don't think it's by accident that Cody is the one that is promoting a show in Vegas. just don't think that was a complete thing they just overlooked.
And why do you think that?
Just another company, you know, likes to run in Vegas and talks about their return to Vegas and all those kind of things.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to spell it out a little. Yeah. Ryan, anything else you want to bring up?
The only other question I might have is on Ezekiel. Is he a big fan of the Ultimate Warrior and Sting? Because I notice he incorporates a lot of the Ultimate Warrior. He even does Stinger Splash. So it seems like those are his two favorite wrestlers, either that or the writers want to base that wrestler off of those two wrestlers.
Yeah, he definitely has some resemblances to the Ultimate Warrior. I'm not sure how wise that is to emulate, you know, the you know, awful human being that Warrior was, even if they have a Warrior Award named after him, or at least awful points of views that he had that he never distanced himself from when he had years and years to do it. But as an iconic wrestling character, and, you know, you look at it through innocent eyes and you want to pay tribute to it in some way, subtly, that probably works. I don't know if he wants to wrap his character around it, and certainly they're not going to do anything overt regarding Sting. Robert, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it may be a case, too, of he kind of seems like a guy that would be from a different era himself, so it kind of goes with and we don't really know what this character is, but you know, aesthetically, we used to joke that he looked like Macho Man whenever he had the beard.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just might be kind of an inside thing or something that just kind of fits who the character is. I don't think they're putting too much effort into that, though.
Yeah, it doesn't feel real over. All right, Ryan, appreciate it as always.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
Yep, you bet. All right, let's give our emailers a chance to be heard here a little bit. We will begin with Zach in Texas. The Cody Rhodes Theory match highlighted two of WWE's biggest flaws. The commentary was not good. Only the most basic of moves and finishers were called. They didn't even call the stomp on the desk for crying out loud. Actually, I think they did. But the bigger problem, though, is the fact that going into the match, anyone who's ever watched an episode of Raw knew this big match was never going to have a finish. That's a huge problem. Well, we opened with that, didn't we, Robert? How are people supposed to care about or invest in a championship match when they know there's not going to be a finish? I literally found myself waiting for Rollins to show up more than actually engaging in the match. I should also mention that Cody still feels like such an alien in this world. He's a real person battling a cartoon villain. Robert, your thoughts on anything there?
I do like that analogy you left there. On my show earlier today, I was talking about how sometimes there's a little bit of a disconnect with Cody just because he's like the serious guy in this colorful cartoon world. It's hard to be that invested the way you were in some of his other matches. So I thought that is kind of relevant. Knowing the DQ is coming just always takes something away. I mean, there's just no way around it, and that's part of why you don't do those finishes that often again, so you're not constantly expecting that that's going to be a thing. But that's kind of how we let off the show tonight.
Yep. All right, JB in Jacksonville says, first and foremost, if you can use any of your sources or contacts to find a way that we can donate toward feeding the newborn triplets of Frank Blowman, I think that's a way your listeners can really give back. He was the jobber opponent of Veer, who we have not talked about yet. It was also great to see. Okay.
Commentary was very invested in telling you that he was in good shape, though, which I appreciated.
Yes. It was great to see Alexa Bliss back, and when she leaves for Hollywood, she's going to be seen as one of their biggest missed opportunities. She connects with the crowd naturally more than almost anyone in the company, has turned in some of the worst creative of all time into passably watchable, and has great facial expressions and a sympathetic underdog presence. I'd like to see her get a major push as a main event level babyface, and I think her merchandise sales can and support, fan support can prove she's capable of way more than they give her. Am I off on this one? I think they're a little gun-shy as far as her health. Her size and her offense isn't super strong. If she was a more of a world-class level female wrestler, and she's good, but if she was like world-class, like I think it'd just feel like more of a swing and a miss. But with health issues and her just not being, you know, at the Sasha or Becky level in in-ring work, I mean, I kind of see where some of this goes, but I think some of it too is just they kind of cornered themselves with the storyline during the Thunderdome era, and they haven't kind of found a way to fight themselves out of that corner they painted themselves into, whatever, mixing metaphors there. I hope they find something that they feel comfortable with and push her. I'm not sure that I see her as like the centerpiece lead babyface. I think she can be really valuable, but one spot under that. That's kind of my take. I know some people disagree and just think the other attributes she has more than make up for any shortcomings. What do you think, Robert?
I think more than anything, it's the height issue. Like, it is a real deficiency that she has. That's kind of unique to her in some ways, because she's got small stature and isn't like the super worker. So there's kind of not really an avenue for her to remain long-term going up against the other more legitimate-looking women on the roster. Like, it's one thing to be Daniel Bryan or to be Eddie Guerrero and be a short wrestler, but at least, you know, it's the perception that you're so technical savvy that it's fine for you to be in there with Big Cass or Brock Lesnar or Batista or whoever it is you're in there with. She doesn't have that. What she does have is she has, I think, the most important part of wrestling, which is the talking and the character and all those things. And I think, you know, that's why she is still around, and she's fairly embraced by both the raw viewer who just watches that and nothing else. And I would say, and the crowd that listens to this show, I think there's a pretty wide acknowledgement that she is a talent and she has something. I think the best thing for her is just to kind of be around. And I know that's probably not the most satisfying thing to hear, because I don't think she can be in that main event level. But I also don't think it served her well to be in this theme thing for the last couple of years. I think it killed a lot of that momentum she has. And, you know, the email mentioned Hollywood or whatever. And I don't know if that is in her future, but I definitely think, like, there could be a day when she's hosting a major talk show or a major award show. I think that is just as likely to happen with her. So I think she's someone that's good to be around WWE. She's just in a difficult spot because, like you said, that top number two babyface or, you know, number two section babyface or heel is probably the best place for her, but it's also inherently limited. It's a difficult conundrum with her. She's one, though, I would not want to let go. She's one that at contract time, I think I'd put up quite a bit of cash for.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we'll go to the next topic here. This new edge gimmick is just the cheapest of the cheap of cheap heat nonsense. The formula is your city sucks, your sports team sucks, everyone in the crowd is ugly, everyone in the crowd is stupid. It's so lazy and groan-inducing. I also hear the voice of the great Jim Valley in my head, who has a gimmick of every heel turn being about the fans when they stand out there saying they turned for not feeling cared for about during injuries. The tired keyboard warrior line bemoaning the fans complaining about Edge online and the bug me at the airport at 4 a.m. for autographs and sell them on eBay line that's been used to death. This is a note to say this group is horrible. Yeah, I mean, Edge, I honestly, like, the fact that Edge, with the clout I assume he has, is going with this material and some of the, like, trite lines, like some of the words he's using and the phrases, it's just, it is groan-inducing, head-shaking. It feels beneath him. I think JB summed it up well. I think the weakness in the Edge character that we talk about a lot is just the lack of believability that he is this as opposed to what we got to know otherwise. You know, it just doesn't. We know Adam Copeland too much for this to work, and there just wasn't anything to really explain it. And he, as JB said, yeah, this is every cliche. I don't even need to repeat the bullet points. JB hit him really well. Robert, anything you want to add?
Well, you know, it was summed up that well. I do wonder what other direction if they were going to go heel with him they could have done. I don't know how much of like a rated R superstar you could have done with a mid 40s, you know, current climate. Edge, yeah, I didn't know that the Brood was going to be the way they made it go, but it does feel like even if you were going to go that direction, you probably should have gone a little more all in than basically this cut and paste thing that they just kind of have, you know, okay, we need to get booed. Let's talk about the NHL team not being great. Like that is a very weird lane, and it's been confounding that that's where they went with this character. I mean, the mountain of omnipotence stuff is one thing, but at least you can see some logic to it. This is just this kind of feels like something they haven't given up on because they're still adding to, but they definitely maybe abandoned some plans that they might have had for it initially.
All right, we'll go to Ed in High Desert, California. Good evening, Wade and Robert. The whole Judgment Day grouping for me is a big disappointment. Whatever Edge is doing doesn't feel like anything. It's like he's playing a character, being a character, just another Bray or Seth. Seems a natural fit to add Rhea, but again, it feels like she's just acting. Whatever authenticity she had way back when has fully been erased. She doesn't feel like a thing. Maybe it's just my view, but I didn't exactly feel like she blew Liv away in that match. Should they have had Rhea just beat down Liv and just let the ref ring the bell? I don't know. I thought she was pretty dominant. I mean, Liv made a little comeback and she swatted her out of midair, but to me it seemed like that was a pretty strong win for Ripley. Robert, what did you come away thinking?
Yeah, and I think the goal was for it to be kind of uncomfortable. I think that's kind of what they were going for. And then you get the interference on the other end to build up that pop too. So I think you kind of needed it to play out that way in order for it to work. Yeah, I get the genericness. It does hit Rhea with, you know, the autograph thing, as you were just saying. So those concerns are there. And then my concerns about her not actually being a heel. But I kind of still want to see where exactly this is going to go, because we've only had two shows with it to really establish where we're going.
His next question is, the announcers are talking about other members, anyone specific you can see joining? So, Robert, I guess I'll throw to you. And anyone seem like a good candidate, either here or either on the roster already or NXT or elsewhere?
Shoot, you're putting me on the spot here. I'm guessing it's got to be like a dark character. Maybe something within the tag division, but that's kind of hard to see. Maybe you go to SmackDown and pick up Shotzi or something like that. Maybe to give her a little more of a focus for where her weirdness comes from. But I don't have a good answer for that right off the top of my head.
Yeah. If you were to go to SmackDown, I would say bring in Dominic, just like do something really different with him. You know, where all of a sudden he's walking out there just as like this zombie where his mind has been erased. You don't have to have everybody be, you know, oh, they're with Edge to get a boost to be a main eventer. You can add people who are just, you know, kind of lackeys who are there to, you know, take the fall in a six man or two man or four man tag team match or something like that. T-Bar, you know, if they wanted to give him a little something extra, that could work. Or I said from SmackDown, Dominic, I think, is Raw based. So.
I was wondering about that, but I thought I didn't want to question it. I don't know.
Everyone should question. If I get something wrong, you know, bring it up.
No, you are unquestioned leader here, so we don't speak out against you.
No, that's not good. Because then I hear about it three days later from someone, and then they think you didn't know either.
No, we can't kill
look
our
out
credibility.
For yourself. Okay. Yeah, look out for yourself. Yeah. All right. Anyway, were you gonna say someone else or?
I was gonna say, in theory, you could have Baron Corbin or one of those guys also as a part of that, because his character would kind of fit. Although I think him and Priest might be too much of duplicates. For that to actually work.
Yeah. All right. He also says, if Lashley and Omos are going to be in a cage, why not just do it at Hell in a Cell? Simply trying to get a few viewers? Are those two going to move the dial in a way you'd want? Of course, you do have to ask the question, is there a cage big enough to hold Omos? And he said he's being sarcastic. Yes, for sure. Omos can practically just reach the top of the cage with his arm, depending on if he gets on his tiptoes and really stretches or not. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they can... I mean, we had a six-match pay-per-view last night. They're not going to load up every pay-per-view like WrestleMania. You can do two nights of long four-hour shows and still not fit everybody on. So they've got to – I mean, they're getting paid big money from NBC Universal and USA Network and Fox. They got to deliver some big matches to them, and I think this is just fine, Robert. I like that matches that feel like they should be on pay-per-view are going to be on a cable or broadcast show.
Right, and they've done that a lot more recently anyway, and I think it's worked okay. You've had the two Sonya Deville feuds have really culminated on their television shows, and that was probably the right place for that. And I think maybe the Omos thing's almost better not on pay per view, because then they won't be given so long. Because at least it is broken up by the commercials and the pace of television. Although they did start with their whole nonsense of, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. It's like, isn't that literally how you win the matches, by running away from your opponents? But that's just the whole thing with cage matches. Yeah.
Yes.
In the same proximity of Hell in the Cell, though, is a little weird. I do think that is a little bit of a weird choice, because it's, Hell in the Cell is like, the upgrade of the cage match. So it's kind of weird for that to be, just to remind people what a cage match is that close to a different style of one coming up.
Totally, totally. He also says, did you notice during the Money in the Bank commercial, Cody said it's for a chance to main event WrestleMania? Have they changed what Money in the Bank is, or are they just trying to trade in on the WrestleMania name? Doesn't that kind of cheapen the Royal Rumble? More if they change what it means to win the briefcase, less if they're just using the phrase. But still, that phrase goes with the Royal Rumble. I didn't pick up on that, but he did. Maybe they just mean if you have the briefcase, you maybe can hold on to it until Mania. Robert?
Yeah, that started like last night. The detectives roll over that on Twitter, and no one can figure out what the heck that actually implies. Unless it's the case of Cody's going to win it and cash it in at Mania, so they're just already kind of planting those seeds, maybe? I mean, I don't know.
That's a long journey.
Yeah, there's a lot of commitment you'd have to make.
And, it shouldn't be, I don't know. Anyway, all right. The Lacey Evans experiment has crashed and burned. This is still Ed in High Desert. Even if they're trying to do a swerve with it, seeming like a face, but actually make her a heel, it's still a loss. The story she's telling can be told in a much better way to make her a face. And if this is to make her a heel, it's just awful. It makes me not care about her. Where would you go with her? Yeah, if her angle, Robert, is the fans didn't cheer me enough after I bared my soul to them, so screw them, I'm a heel. I mean, that would just be groan-inducing, too. I think they want her to be a babyface, and we'll see if it worked. That's my take.
Yeah, I think they're just trying too hard. It's not that I don't think they have this nefarious plan to make her a heel out of it, because as low as they can go, I don't necessarily think that's what's on the menu right now.
Yeah. All right, and kudos to caller Justin bringing up the lack of title on Raw of the men's major singles title. Also, the fact that no one seems to be concerned with going for the titles. And kudos to Robert for mentioning, how about they talk about it? That's exactly what I've been saying. There's avenues besides Roman wrestling that are showing up that they can go down. It just seems, again, this was poorly planned. Thanks for all the hard work. Go VIP. The VIP post-pay-per-view roundtables are excellent. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, Todd and Rich and I had a good time last night. Reviewing Backlash for VIP members. Yes, they could talk about the Raw, the WWE title. But WWE doesn't like to talk about things that aren't, next up. That's just not what they do. They don't draw attention to things that aren't the major thing on that show or building to a match that's going to be on the next pay-per-view. That's just not the business they're in. I think they pay a price for it. I get the rationale for not doing it. You know, you don't want people thinking about things that you don't want them thinking about. But it makes the belt seem like it didn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's gone and you don't have people talking about it. But, you know, they don't, WWE does not like building anticipation for or interest in something they're not going to deliver. Well, you can laugh at that because, you know, they had, you know, the U.S. title match and they just had a cop-out finish and Oscar Bianca and they get go 4 minutes. But in the big arc, they don't want to spend TV time on making you think about a match that they're not even actually going to present anytime soon. So that's why they do this. But yeah, I mean, they pay a price because it makes it seem like nobody cares about being world champion anymore on their 3-hour USA Network flagship, Robert.
Yeah, and it's funny because when you hear anything that Cody does that's not directly on the cable television show, that's all he's talking about in his promos. And so, you know, there is some sense of that. And that's the reason, though, Wade, for what you're talking about, how they don't mention anything in front of him, of why the absentee champions become such an issue whenever they do occur.
Yeah.
Because it's a weakened version of the show. It's not that the – you know, the champ's here, but we're not going to see him for a couple of weeks or whatever. And you know, he's still a presence. It is because they just disappear. And we have to sort of pretend like none of it matters, which with your main title really doesn't make sense because that is kind of the anchor of the whole show. So it's almost why is there a men's singles division with it even, you know, being the prop that it is supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, finally, JB in Detroit says, I was very confused by the Cody Theory Rollins angle tonight on multiple levels. 3 points. The finish of the match was obvious. They couldn't have had either Cody or Theory lose clean tonight, as both are at the beginning of seemingly big pushes, and the only obvious way out was to have Seth interfere. So I do think a lot of fans are savvy enough to you know, think about that. I think there's more viewers than we in this, you know, podcast dissecting, you know, closely following WWE and thinking about their booking and all of that realm that we're in. I think there's a lot more fans out there who aren't thinking about that. They're like, oh my God, Cody might be US champion. How will Vince McMahon react to Theory if he loses so quickly? Or Theory beats Cody. Wow, that's really pushing, or that's not even pushing. That's going to launch Theory to stardom, and Cody will just say he had a tough fight with Seth the night before, and that's why he lost. I mean, I don't think I talk to enough fans who aren't like listeners and callers of the show to know that not everybody thinks about the booking being as obvious as we do. That said, a big part of the audience does, and this was pretty obvious. Right, Robert?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. We've referenced it several times. And I think that, once again, speaks to just why you just don't do these finishes that often. That way you can use something like this in a situation where it would probably warrant it to get out of the situation. I was thinking, though, as you were reading the email, I do like that if this really becomes like the absolute reason of why we have to have a Hell in a Cell match, that Cody can be so distraught at a losing out in the U.S. title. I do think that is a good thing to incorporate that into storylines more often, that, you know, these things like these secondary titles, if they're going to be there, they need to matter and be of importance, and people need to be angry when they don't have them.
Yeah. All right, number 2, does it really make sense to have Cody Rollins 3 at Hell in a Cell? Cody's won twice now, once cleanly and once by slightly questionable methods. If all Seth had to do was attack Cody for a rematch, couldn't he just conceivably do that for the rest of time until he wins? Hey, Robert, we might not rule that out. maybe that happens. The other hope is Seth loses 3 times to Cody and snaps, and he changes his character to something else. And people who don't like the Seth character might like the idea that Seth goes into some sort of, you know, deep funk and comes out a different person. Robert, are you muted?
I think you cut out, Wade.
Oh, could you imagine Cody ending up, if he beats Seth 3 times, that Seth just goes away for a while because he's so distraught and comes back a new character?
It's a possibility, but I think they're pretty in love with this character right now. So I don't think that's something that they would want to do. But it's going to be something WWE doesn't do often, and that is definitive losses. And that's going to be something on a character, and that's something that we just don't get that often in this company. So watching the reaction to it will be interesting.
Yeah. He also, as point number three, it looks like he made a similar point. I don't see Cody losing in the cell, but I think you run the risk of making Seth look like a loser and lowering his perception as a star with such a long string of losses. As always, love the show and go VIP. All right, Robert, we will end there, but I didn't get to this sooner. I apologize. Tell people about your show and how they can hear from you and that mystery caller person earlier, Rick something. Robert, fill people in on that.
Sure. So every Monday evening on the Daily Cast with MMA
Rick Monty.
Torch.
It's Rick Monty, right?
Rick Monty. Okay. Yeah, it's not MMA Torch. It's PW Torch. But it is Rick Monty. I believe that was the person from 818 that called in earlier. He's the only other person in my phone that's 818, so it's probably him.
What if it's his older or younger brother?
Oh, and you know what? He's got a sibling that lives very close to him. That's a distinct possibility.
Maybe Ken,
or
Ezekiel.
They're in the same business. Like they have the same job. I'm not even making this up.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I know it could be. Rick or his brother or whoever it is that hosts a show with me every Monday evening as a part of the Daily Cast lineup. It is called MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, and the show is just that. It is largely an MMA show, but we like to break it down as if it's a show like this, where we talk about a lot of the things you talk about in pro wrestling. Ratings, pay-per-view buy rates, who deserves a push, who doesn't do. But we also do the standard MMA fare. We just do a little bit less of it. We like to cover the broad things, the big things, and some of the silly things at MMA, because we sort of take it in as an entertainment product, and then we sneak in a little bit of pro wrestling talk at the end of our shows. That Rick fella, he's a pretty large boxing fan, so he brings some boxing talk into the conversation. So kind of a full service combat sports show that leans mostly on MMA.
Very good. So everybody search PW Torch to subscribe to the full lineup. Robert, great having you back. Really good conversation about the post-Backlash episode of Raw.
Yeah, let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks to our listeners, too. And I'll be by Wednesday night after Dynamite. So join us for that also.